The Ides of March actually happened in May. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Hey, it's good to be back with you, Barry. It's very good. It's interesting that you use that title because in mid-March, we ran a program on March 18th, and it's on our website, www.principledpolicy.com. We ran a program called Et Tu Brute, referring to the Ides of March, because we had just passed the Ides of March. And we basically talked about the Ides of March and how it related to essentially media self-immolation as it attempts to firebomb President Trump. And what we were talking about back then was Rachel Maddow and the big important story about Trump's 12-year-old or however old it was, the tax returns that basically showed he paid $37 million in taxes. And we had a Gawker publisher who was talking about essentially useless advice on how to use Zen Buddhism to beat Donald Trump. This from Gawker. And if you don't know who Gawker was, Gawker is no more.
I was going to say, then you missed out.
Yes. Gawker was a website that specialized in salacious content regarding celebrities. And in fact, so salacious that they were sued by the person that we know as Hulk Hogan. He had Terry something or other. And they lost, and they had to pay out $140 million, which broke the back of the company. And so, thanks for your advice. I think we might skip it. We also talked about Trump derangement syndrome and how that led to an attack on a radio talk show host, Michael Savage, and also how someone hacked into McDonald's tweet system and probably a disgruntled employee or somebody involved in as a contractor. Chances are it was a contractor who basically texted deplorable things about Trump. I love that word, deplorable. And we also talked about a Hawaiian judge who set aside a Trump immigration executive order. So all these things sort of add up to this, to the idea that the press is not exactly what you would call pro-Trump at all. You could not even call them neutral on Trump. It's becoming very obvious that they have their sights set on dethroning Donald Trump and by any means necessary, and that they will use any thing that they think they need to do to get the job done. This is they smell Watergate blood in the water, and like sharks, they will do anything they can do to, you know, get at that source of the Watergate blood in the water. They all want to make themselves into the next Woodward and Bernstein. So that all goes to some of the topics I think we're going to be discussing today.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The funny thing is, Chuck, if you pay attention to that media, you realize that they're hypocrites. They're chameleons. One day, the hue and cry goes out in one direction, and then the next day, if that direction is taken, the hue and cry starts squalling for it to go back the other direction. And just last night, breaking news that the president, Donald Trump, finally did something that many people thought he probably should have done when he originally took office back on January the 20th, and that is he fired FBI Director James Comey. Now, for those of you who may have not been following much of anything going on politically between July of last year and yesterday, James Comey was the director of the FBI who, shall we say, Chuck, was a very colorful personality in the respect of how he was handling his job. He was doing an investigation during the campaign time. He did an investigation, especially around this whole situation with Hillary Clinton and her email server, and why her emails ended up tracking over not to her chief of staff or her closest confidant, Huma Abedin's devices, but how it tracked over to Abedin's husband, Anthony Weiner's computer and laptop, and how he ended up with a lot of classified emails Now, remember, Wiener was a congressman at the time.
Well, actually, no, he was not.
The question is,
Barry, I got.
Oh, that's right. He'd already left.
He'd left Congress.
Now, this is an interesting
This is an interesting nuance on this problem, because Anthony Wiener had left his job after basically sending pictures of parts of his naked body to girls that were underage. Now,
right.
Think about this for a minute. He had lost his job over this. Why would he have to lose his job over this? I mean, it's New York, and he did attempt to rehabilitate himself. If you'll remember, he ran for mayor of New York City after he'd sat out from Congress for a couple of years, thinking he was probably resurrected. And what killed him in that race? Do you remember?
He did it again.
He did it again. Yeah, he couldn't stop himself.
Yeah, I was gonna say, there was more.
What problem could there be with someone of Anthony Weiner's caliber having access to classified, essentially State Department emails?
Well, I mean, the quickest answer to that question is that if you had something on him like that before it broke, then he would be subject to a lot of pressure from whoever knew about it to basically do what they wanted or give them what they wanted in order not to have that come out and be public. He was definitely a great candidate for blackmail.
Exactly. He's a huge risk. And in fact, just because he's out of office doesn't mean he's still not a risk, because he desperately wants to get back in the fray.
Absolutely. And so you've got this situation. So Comey, during the campaign cycle, comes out and makes an announcement that they'd investigated and there was nothing there. Although he used his press conference to basically deride Clinton on the way she handled her business. And it's funny, because after the firing, I saw a couple of legal commentators basically saying that he should have been fired right then, because that was not, he basically ran around the attorney general at the time, Loretta Lynch, and basically was doing things that were outside the scope of his investigation. All he had to do was just announce that there was not enough evidence found in order to continue the investigation. That would have been it. But, you know, he kind of went farther. And so the Democrats were furious with him at the time. There were calls that he needed to be fired. He needed to go. James Comey's got to go. And he goes to Capitol Hill. You know, he goes in front of Congress. You know, they're still yelling and howling about this. Of course, Hillary loses the election. And what does she do? She blames James Comey and this FBI investigation for costing her the election. So what happens on January 20th at the transition? Donald Trump retains James Comey as the director of the FBI, which made a lot of people scratch their heads and wonder what in the world he was up to. But because the Democrats had made such a big issue out of possible interference in the election by Russia, Comey was tasked with basically being on point to investigate that particular, whether there were actual ties. And by the ties, Democrats mean innuendo, enough innuendo that they can like sink somebody's boat.
Right.
Or actual ties between the Russian government and members of the Trump campaign team. Because that's their smoking gun. If they can establish that, without a doubt, that Trump was actively engaged in having Russia tank Hillary Clinton, because supposedly it was the Russians who hacked the servers at the DNC and found out all the salacious information and led all these trails, that if there's that connection, then they have grounds to impeach the president, which many leftist progressives and Democrat members of Congress are still talking about and trying to figure out novel ways on how to bring impeachment against a president who's actually done nothing that rises to the level of impeachment, Chuck.
Well, of course.
He's actually doing his job. And part of his job was yesterday saying enough was enough and firing James Comey from his job at the FBI. Now, I thought it was very interesting in media reports that Trump actually did it pretty much the right way, because he went to the chair and the ranking minority member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and that would be our good friends Lindsey Graham and Dianne Feinstein, and let them know ahead of time that he was going to fire Comey. Neither one of them objected to it. Now, remember, Dianne Feinstein. So, Trump made the announcement, wrote a letter, and what does the media do predictably, Chuck?
Oh, well, they immediately come out and talked about how there's a constitutional crisis because the FBI director was fired in the middle of an investigation, which is simply laughable. I'm going to tell you why it's laughable. This is the same James Comey that I believe in late summer or early fall last year came out and announced that indeed Hillary Clinton had broken the law, but that no jury would convict her based on the evidence that they had uncovered, which was the fact that she had... Look, the law is very clear. I can tell you what the law is because my sister-in-law works for the federal government, specifically for the Defense Department, and if they get caught using a non-company computer to have any communication over a non-secure line, they will be fired and possibly prosecuted. Yes. Because it is a violation of the law to use a personal server to do Defense Department, and I can tell you for sure that's the same thing with the State Department, to do State Department business. Why did Hillary set up, we have to talk about this, just to give it some background, why did Hillary Clinton choose to use a private email server to conduct State Department business? Well, that's actually fairly simple. It was to avoid congressional oversight of her job. Remember that the Congress has oversight over the executive branch positions, all the executive branch agencies, including the President of the United States. And essentially, Hillary claims that she was told by, she claims that Colin Powell told her, if you want to avoid scrutiny by Congress, then you should set up a separate private server, which she did. Now, is this a problem? Yeah, Comey determined without sending it over to the Attorney General that no jury would convict. No grand jury would indict and no jury would convict. Well, I think he had a reason for coming to that conclusion. Do you know what I think that reason is? Think about it for a second. Why would Comey think that at the federal level, no grand jury would indict and no jury would convict? Who was the Attorney General?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
It was Loretta Lynch.
You mean before Trump? Yeah, it was Loretta Lynch.
Yeah, Loretta Lynch was remember, all this happened during the Obama administration. The end of the Obama administration, admittedly, but it was the Obama administration. Comey didn't think that Loretta Lynch or her Justice Department could be trusted to actually bring charges, and that he would end up with egg on his face because what they would do is belittle and denigrate all the evidence and essentially not bring important evidence to the forefront. I really think this is why Comey did not refer it to the Justice Department for prosecution, because it should have been prosecuted. Had it been a Republican, Barry, you and I both know what would have happened. It would have been prosecuted. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Well, you're right, because, you know, this is the same Loretta Lynch who basically grabbed some time with the candidate Hillary Clinton's husband, Bill Clinton, on an airplane tarmac to have a long briefing where they really just talked about the grandkids, right?
Right.
Except
right.
for the fact that nobody buys that. Well, but here, you know, here's the thing, Chuck. I mean, it's going to be hard for people like Chuck Schumer and others who are out there crying now. There's a lot of Democrats who are moaning and groaning how horrible this is. Ron Wyden of Oregon is screaming bloody murder. And Chuck Schumer went out and did a press conference last night to basically say how horrible it was and that this was all politically motivated. And in other words, they're trying to beat the drum for more for impeachment for him doing this. But there's an interesting thing here, and this is one they're going to have to get around, because let's see how quickly the left cannibalizes their own. And I say that because it's funny. Today in Breitbart.com, there is an article by Joel Pollack, and the left's going to have a real hard time, because in this Breitbart article, it's basically looking at a discussion on CNN that happened Tuesday night that Don Lemon, their host, hosted. Now, of course, Don Lemon's no conservative.
He's definitely a
progressive leftist.
Yeah.
But he had a couple of guests on talking about the firing of Donald Trump. And his two guests were CNN's own legal analyst, Jeffrey Toobin, who basically came out and like threw the card down on the table immediately. And the quote from the Breitbart article says, "The fact that he did this will disgrace his memory for as long as the presidency is remembered." I mean, I love how these guys just like go to these like completely over the top. I'm so offended. I can't believe it. And this will go down in infamy. and he keeps going. He doubles down. There's only one date that will be remembered after January the 20th so far in the Trump presidency, and it's the day of the Tuesday night massacre. See, now they're already, the thing hadn't happened for more than 4 or 5 hours, Chuck, and they already have got it spun in the media as the Tuesday night massacre. Now, Chuck, you know, in my thinking, a massacre, even a firing, is where you fire dozens, if not hundreds of people all at once, shut down divisions, whatever. This was more of a strategic strike. this was a surgical strike of getting rid of one person. But as much as Don Lemon and Jeff Toobin want to turn this into the defining moment of Trump's presidency, they got a little trouble. Because Don Lemon had also invited on, probably thinking full well, that it was just going to be a happy backslap fest. He also had the emeritus professor of the Harvard Law School, somebody you and I are familiar with, Alan Dershowitz.
Yes, Alan Dershowitz, yeah.
And Alan Dershowitz basically came out and said immediately, "No, you're all wrong. Trump was within his rights to fire James Comey, and there's no need for a special prosecutor in the Russia case." I'm sure that the look on the faces of Don Lemon and Jeff Toobin had to have been priceless. And he basically says that, no, should Comey be the director of the FBI? The answer to that is no. And he says he lost his credibility. A lot of this is his fault. And they go in to talk about how he tried to usurp the authority of the Attorney General, both Loretta Lynch and now recently Jeff Sessions. You know, it was almost as if Comey was setting himself up to be like he is the only person you need to listen to in the Justice Department. Well, we all know how the chain of command works. When an underling tries to basically put himself up as the base commander, it usually doesn't turn out too well for him now, does it?
Well, it's interesting that that comes up, too, because you and I had talked about this on a show again in March, actually the week after we ran the Et Tu Brute. We ran a program called Obamacare and an Article 5 Convention, the Never-Ending Stories.
Okay. Right.
Well, what was one of the things we discussed? Well, is the odious James Comey the most powerful man in Washington at the moment? Why was he the most powerful man in Washington? Well, he seemed bulletproof at the time. And in fact, we took that from an article. And by the way, that is posted on our website, www.principledpolicy.com. All these have been posted. There was an article in Bloomberg. Again, not exactly a nonpartisan outlet. Bloomberg is a quote-unquote Republican, but he is on the far, 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 far left. And his publication is not exactly a conservative tome. The subtitle of this article is, "This is no way to run a country, and the Russians are not to blame," which is exactly right. The whole Russia interfered with the American election thing is falling apart and has been falling apart for at least 6 weeks. The radicals in Congress are still hanging on to it, and they're looking at this as a smoking gun and all this stuff. The fact is that Trump is not under investigation, and he did what was within his purview, as Dershowitz has said. He did what was within his purview, and that is to fire Democratic appointees to the political offices that they hold. We're talking about Yates, who essentially refused to do her job. She made a good point in the hearings, if you had paid any attention to the hearings. And she was asked, wasn't it your job to defend the position of the government? And she essentially came out and answered it in what I would call a constitutional fashion. She said, "When I was confirmed by the Senate Judiciary Committee, I was asked a question. And the question was, would you refuse to uphold a presidential action like an executive order, if it violated the Constitution. And she said, I said yes. So what you're saying is that what President Donald Trump had done, in your opinion, was unconstitutional, and she said yes. But the comeback was, would you not expect to be fired for that, over a disagreement over what the Constitution entails, or should you not have resigned? And she basically dissembled. Well, the answer is yes, she should have expected to be fired if she refused to resign. Because essentially, if you think the president has done something unconstitutional, your job is to resign rather than simply throw it on the ash heap and then fight it out in the court. That's the real way this is supposed to work. Now, did she do that? No, obviously not. She didn't do that. She chose to take the political low road. And these are the kind of people that Trump has been dealing with. And the Senate did a very good job of really holding up a number of his appointees so that he couldn't get rid of some of these people faster. But the fact is that the president has the right to have the people who are ideologically in line with him to do these jobs in political appointments. One of the problems he's going to run into is the fact that, despite the fact that he does have people who are ideological aligned with him in a number of these positions at this point, the bureaucracy itself, especially in the Justice Department and the State Department, the bureaucracy is extremely far left. Let's not kid ourselves. We need to go back in history a little bit, just to give it another little background piece. One of the things, you know, people get all worked up about Joseph McCarthy and what it was he was saying, and you get all kinds of weird conflations like Joseph McCarthy was responsible for the blacklists in Hollywood. Well, that's nonsense. That was the House Committee on Un-American Activities. Joseph McCarthy was a member of the Senate. He was not even allowed on the House and on the floor of the House of Representatives except by special invitation. What Joseph McCarthy found was that there were 300 plus members of the Communist Party or Communist sympathizers working in the State Department. What happened with that? You know, McCarthy still gets vilified. The fact is that it was found that there were at least 300. I think the number ended up being close to 400 when the Matrokhin archives were essentially opened, and we could see who was acting as agents for specific governments. And the fact is that there were around 400 people, between 300 and 400 people, that worked in the State Department that, in fact, were members of the Communist Party and were working as active intelligence agents feeding things to Stalinist Russia and to the post-Stalinist Russia and other communist satellite countries. If you'll recall, I know I'm going far afield, but if you'll recall, who was one of the people who essentially was gotten by Richard Nixon, who had been a big player in the State Department and in the UN and in a number of places in the Roosevelt administration. Do you remember where Richard Nixon made his bones?
I'm trying to remember. Okay.
Richard Nixon made his bones prosecuting Alger Hiss.
That's right. The Alger Hiss case.
And he railroaded Alger Hiss. Alger Hiss was just a progressive, blah, 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 blah. Alger Hiss was an active agent, and he did not report directly to Russia. Believe it or not, I believe, if I remember right, that he was traced to the Bulgarians, that his controls were the Bulgarian government, which essentially was a wholly owned subsidiary of the Russian government at the time. So in other words, they simply didn't directly route it to Russia. They directly routed it through Bulgaria. The net effect was exactly the same. So as you can see, the ideology of people inside the government who are entrenched can have a profound effect on your foreign policy and can have a profound effect on your legal policy. That's exactly the point of all this stuff. Why we're giving you this background. Why it's important to broom out people like Comey, who essentially was doing his best to play both sides of the fence. Now, I'll give him credit for realizing, and I believe a story that I cannot right now locate. If I find it, we'll put it up on this on the posting on this when it goes up. But was talking about that very fact that the one of the he did not trust Loretta Lynch. This is one of the reasons that things got done the way they got done before Trump took office. Now, the fact is that a number of senators, a number of people in the House on the opposition side, on the Democratic side of the ticket, are of the aisle, are basically coming out and saying this whole Russia meme is just nonsense. It's looking more and more and more. If Russia was doing anything, they were simply just trying to monkey wrench the whole works. They weren't coming out specifically in favor of Trump. Does Trump have issues with Flynn? Well, yeah, which is why Flynn got fired. Flynn has some major problems. And what happened? Well, Trump fired him. Well, as soon as it became clear that Flynn had some influence issues, he got fired. Does Trump get any credit for firing Flynn? No, it was a part of a cover-up, and that's what they're saying now about the firing of Comey. No, it's not a cover-up. It's essentially firing one who's too busy trying to cover his own behind. At least that's what it looks like from this chair.
Oh, it does. It looks very much like that, Chuck, because that's probably exactly what it is. Now, I think it's hilarious because, again, the left makes such a big case out of this. As a matter of fact, you can count on CNN. I mean, basically, they scrubbed everything they were doing, and this became like the only thing that they wanted to talk about last night. And, of course, on Anderson Cooper 360, on their program, another show which I refuse steadfastly to watch.
Yes.
but I'm glad that somebody did and reported on this. They had on Clinton's former campaign manager, Robbie Mook. Now, Robbie Mook, basically, if you look at this guy, he is a smarmy, slick, younger guy. And then what he said was, okay, Chuck, again, this is where I have to laugh that the Democrats talk about democracy all the time, but when democracy happens, they're so upset about it.
No, well, yeah,
you know, and I'm saying democracy in the sense of what the average person says is democracy. You know, Donald Trump won the presidency. We know that. Donald Trump is a Republican. We know that. The former administration of Barack Obama was Democratic. We know that. Barack Obama made appointments to all of these various cabinet agencies and to federal agencies. We know that. James Comey was appointed by Barack Obama. We know that. Even Alan Dershowitz, Mr. Liberal, says Trump was absolutely within his rights to fire Comey. He's a Republican president. This was from a previous administration. He has the right to put in there who he wants to put in there. But here's Robbie Mook, the campaign manager who basically lost the presidency and probably the political career of Hillary Clinton. So maybe we should give this guy a medal. I don't know. But basically, here's what his quote on the firing of James Comey. And I quote, and this is coming from a Breitbart article, "This is the kind of authoritarian behavior we've seen spread in other parts of the world. If we don't stop it now, I'm very worried about what could happen." Ooh, ooh, ooh. He's been triggered, Chuck.
Yes, obviously.
The firing of James Comey, which is standard operating procedure when a Democrat takes office, that they clean house and fire everybody. But for some reason now that a Republican has done it, especially this Republican, Donald Trump, I'm very worried about what could happen. So is Robbie going to go into therapy and counseling for this? You know, is his inner snowflake starting to melt? I really want to know about this. But, you know, he uses this whole idea about this authoritarian behavior. Grow up, Robbie Mook. Grow up. Because, frankly, what it gets right down to is This is the leader of the free world who was picked by the people of the United States in a process that we have used historically. He won. Get over it. And when, and with the winner, and as they say, to the winner goes the spoils, right, Chuck?
Well, that's exactly the point. The left has been, it's a, Trump doesn't have a mandate. He didn't have a majority of the votes. He snuck in through the Electoral College. Well, that's the way this works. And he snuck in through the Electoral College by getting 30 votes more than he needed in the Electoral College. What does that mean?
Right.
Well, that means that the two wings of the part, the two far extreme areas of the United States of America chose him by overwhelming margins, and everybody else chose Hillary Clinton by overwhelming margins, but everybody else chose Donald Trump by a smaller margin. Nonetheless, there was a margin out here in the big center of the country, and that's the way this works. And therefore, did he have a mandate? Yes, he did have a mandate.
Absolutely.
And he has a mandate because he got elected, and he got elected by more than 30 electoral votes, more than was necessary to get elected by. Now, what does that mean? That means that he gets to run the agencies the way he wants to run them.
Bingo.
And the fact is that he has a majority of his party in Congress. Whether they're completely on board with him or not is another issue.
Lindsey Graham comes to mind.
Lindsey Graham comes to mind.
John McCain comes to mind.
McConnell.
So not all of them are with him, but the point is they at least understand this. When he called Lindsey Graham, who chairs the subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee that's actually doing the investigation into the potential linkages between Trump's campaign and the Russian government, Lindsey Graham was perfectly fine with it. He completely understood it. Yes, this makes sense. Yes, go ahead. You know, we don't have any problem with this. And Dianne Feinstein, who's the ranking minority member on that subcommittee, didn't have any problem with the fact that the president's exercising his authority to make personnel decisions, because that's what this really is. This is a personnel decision. Now, okay, are they trying to hide something? Who knows? Who cares? Really, at this point, the election's over with. Hillary lost. Vladimir Putin is not handling our foreign policy. Okay, let's all just agree to that, because frankly, anything else, it just smacks of tinfoil hat conspiracy theories on the left. And that's why Robbie Mook, I think I have to laugh so hard at this guy, is that, you know, he's sitting here moaning and groaning. And of course, I like this, if we don't stop it now. So their goal is we're going to run this guy out of office.
Yeah, exactly.
We can't accept that Donald Trump is our president. Now, there are many in the Republican side of the aisle who could say exactly the same thing. We just can't stomach the idea that Donald Trump is our president.
Well, Paul Ryan.
That's okay.
Paul Ryan being one of them, yeah.
That's right. But, you know, when you get right down to it, it's like, here's the deal. And they're moaning and groaning because, well, they fired Comey and didn't appoint a special prosecutor. Well, even Dershowitz said, there's no need for a special prosecutor. This is ridiculous. You know, it's like, let Trump appoint the next FBI director, and Sessions, of course, the head of the Justice Department, will be involved in that. Let's get a guy who understands his boundaries and who understands the rule of law a lot better than James Comey did. And then let's move forward. It's when it gets right down to it, you know, the Democrats are going to continue to beat this dead horse as long as they can swing the whip.
Oh, of course. Let me give you another example. You brought up Robbie Mook. I'm going to bring up John Podesta. There's an article in the Daily Caller. Hillary's campaign chairman attacked Comey in the morning, outraged over massacre hours later. Now, seriously, this is John Podesta, who in the morning is railing, against James Comey, and you know, the whole he cost Hillary the election, you know, blah 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 blah, all that stuff. Just last week, Hillary Clinton partially blamed Comey for her loss in the 2016 election. No, Hillary, it was you. It was you and no one else but you. So it's not surprising her campaign chairman would also harbor bad blood. Here is a tweet that went out at 11:10 a.m. yesterday, the day that Comey was fired. When I say yesterday, we're recording on Wednesday, as Barry mentioned earlier. The American public is getting mildly nauseous listening to Jim Comey. And he puts in a post from a group called ProPublica. And ProPublica, again, is not exactly a conservative group. But it was about the fact that Comey had misspoken himself in Congress about how many classified emails ended up going from Huma Abedin to Anthony Weiner. Hours later, however, once the news of Comey's firing hit, Podesta's tone changed. While tweeting the New York Times story on the firing just 7 hours later, Podesta said, "At real Donald Trump, didn't you know you're supposed to wait until Saturday night to massacre people investigating you?" Okay. There's that reference to what? The Saturday Night Massacre again. The Richard Nixon administration, when he ordered several attorneys general to fire the special prosecutor, and when they refused, he fired them. If you don't remember that, I believe that was in 1973 or 74. The reference to massacre on Saturday night dates back to Watergate, when Richard Nixon wanted Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox fired by his Attorney General Elliot Richardson. Richardson resigned in protest, as did Deputy Attorney General William Ruckelshaus. Finally, Solicitor General Robert Bork complied with Nixon's order and fired Cox. Another reason why Congress, if you recall, wanted to politically assassinate Robert Bork, because he did fire Archibald Cox, as he was ordered to do by the president. You know, this is one of those things where you get a phone call, possibly late at night, and says, "You have to fire this guy." Okay, fine, I'll fire him. You know, he may not have been fully up to speed on what was going on. But you've got other guys. Bill de Blasio, predictably. The last president to do something like this was Richard Nixon. It didn't end well. They really want to draw the parallels. So it's not just Robbie Mook. It's all these guys. It's all these guys. They all want to use this thing to their own political advantage. And let's face it, Barry, that has been the case since the beginning of the Republic, and will continue to be the case long after you and I have had dirt thrown in our face. That's the way this game gets played. Now, the question is, are there going to be principles involved? Are there principles involved? And, you know, that's kind of our niche. We want, you know, the Institute for Principled Policy. We do want principled policy. Do I think it was a principled policy to fire James Comey? Yes, except I think it should have been done on January 20th.
Absolutely, I agree with that, because, frankly, you should have cleaned house immediately.
But what was going on? You remember, you've got a brand new president who's a political neophyte, and he has to A, to get his footing, and B, Donald Trump is very smart about dealing with executives who won't do their job. And,
oh, yeah.
And what he did here, I think, was he let Comey let out enough rope to let Comey form his own noose and put his neck in it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think this thing,
and Comey obliged by going in front of Congress last week
and grossly misspeaking himself.
Yes.
Now, you'll notice that he wasted no time with Susan Yates. She got fired. You know, and she basically made the big announcement that she wasn't going to do it. She wasn't going to defend Trump's executive order, and she got fired like forthwith. Didn't take any time at all. So he has no problem firing people, but Comey was a different situation, because supposedly he kind of held the keys to the kingdom, if you will. because, you know, I think Trump needed to find out exactly what he actually had. He didn't want to fire him when it looked like he might hold some information on a possible Russian interference in American elections. Well, it's becoming clear that that's just nonsense. Did the Russians have something to do with, did they support one candidate or another? I think probably they did, and I don't think it was Trump. I'll be quite honest, I think they liked Hillary better. If you'll recall, Hillary was in deep trouble for being involved in a sale as a Secretary of State of huge uranium stores, of companies that were involved in mining and refining uranium. That fact gets forgotten. And who was it sold to? It was sold to Russian businesses.
Yes.
Well, is that a particularly good idea? Probably not.
No.
And I would ask, I'm assuming that Russia has its own, Russia is sitting on one of the richest natural resource gold mines, if you will, in the world. Essentially, they sit on resources that have never been touched. Much of it remains undiscovered. They've got oil like you wouldn't believe. They've got natural resources. They've got iron ore. They've got all kinds of stuff. It's a huge country. It covers, I forget how many time zones, 8, I think. I could be wrong on that. I better bone up on that for my trivia stuff. But the fact is that Hillary has had some very strange dealings with the Russians. And, yeah, were there people involved, Flynn and that kind of stuff? Yes. What's it turning out to, what's happening with this, remember the Russian dossier that McCain pushed as fact? And then later backed up and said, well, I didn't push it as fact. I just had this thing, and I thought the FBI should have it, and blah, 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 blah. It's all turning out to be 100% nonsense. Even the author of the darn thing says, well, we never vetted the information. And if you recall, it was very salacious, having to do with prostitutes and things done on beds and that kind of thing. It all turns out to be utter nonsense, designed to do nothing more than to essentially belittle the candidate, make him appear to be a buffoon, the candidate Trump. And how did that work out? Well, he got elected anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because people didn't buy it. People basically recognized that whole nonsense for what it was. Campaign tactics, using, campaign smear tactics. And, this idea that Hillary somehow run a clean campaign, and Robbie Mook was no stranger to digging in the dirt and trying to find things. And neither were, unfortunately, from the Republican side, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, John Kasich, our illustrious governor, were not above just doing and saying things that were simply beyond the pale. When a sitting...
Oh, well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was digging around, and I had mentioned earlier, McCain was fine with this, but you know what the point is? McCain doubled down on stupid last night, and we've got his comment here. This was coming from the Washington Post, of all places, by Josh Rogan. Basically, John McCain on Comey firing, quote, there will be more shoes to drop, unquote. So McCain, after this whole thing comes up, obviously comes rolling into a meeting of the Munich Security Conference core group to brief them on what's going on. And of course, that's supposedly, off the record kind of stuff. But this reporter, Josh Rogan, at the Washington Post, got at McCain's okay to quote him. And basically, he went and said that Trump's firing of Comey is unprecedented, and that the position of FBI directors had special meaning in American public life dating back decades. And then he quotes, and this is where I laughed, where it's like, here's McCain doubling down on stupid. Quote, probably the most respected individual in all of the American government is probably the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, McCain said. I'm very sorry that this has happened, unquote. Chuck, when you think of American government, who do you think is the most respected individual in all of American government? Does the FBI director even remotely cross your mind?
Not hardly.
No, no. I mean, I can see somebody saying the president, obviously. I can see somebody saying maybe the Secretary of State. I can see somebody saying maybe the leader of the House or the Senate majorities or even minorities. I can see a lot of different people, but FBI director is not the person who comes to mind anytime soon. But, you know, this is McCain doing what McCain does best, which is trying to be an underminer. And, you know, he goes into this whole idea. He's like, well, the president does have that constitutional authority, but I can't help but think that this is not a good thing for America. Oh, like the president's hurting the country by getting rid of a Democrat appointee in a sensitive position. Chuck, what are these people thinking?
No, what are they smoking? I'm serious.
What are they smoking? Yeah, I mean, you probably right on that one. And here is McCain praised Comey as a man of, quote, honor and integrity.
Comey? James Comey.
Comey.
Oh, come
James
on.
Comey. John McCain's office basically said he issued a statement Tuesday night, said he was disappointed by Trump's move and praised Comey as a man of honor and integrity. This is John McCain, ladies and gentlemen. The part of the reason why draining the swamp got Donald Trump elected president. People are sick of this. Here's a guy who basically is defending a individual who, number one, went way outside the bounds of where they were supposed to be in their job description. Number two, is a political appointee of the previous administration, which is actually an administration whose party is diametrically opposed to yours. And who, three, has basically outlived his shelf life. But for John McCain, there's nobody more respect than the FBI director, and how dare Donald Trump put America in such peril by firing this guy. Come on. I really have to think that the people of Arizona must really wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, what have I done? Because they had a great opportunity to get rid of this guy. And I know there are going to be some people who are going to bristle because John McCain is a quote-unquote war hero. That's fine. Great. Yeah. Problem is, the war he's fighting now, he's fighting against his friends. He's turned. He's lost it, folks. You know, this is the same guy in 2008 brings Sarah Palin on the ticket just so he can basically take pot shots at her and embarrass her or try to embarrass her. Because he and others like him, and you named Lindsey Graham, and you named are progressives. They're not conservatives. They're not rank-and-file Republicans. They're progressives. They're liberals. And as liberals, they're jumping on the bandwagon against what they see as a populist uprising that may sweep their position out of power and out of influence. And this Comey thing is just a microcosm on the bigger picture that everything's changing in Washington, D.C. And these old guard guys don't know how to handle it. And I think Trump is just absolutely mirthful about this. He basically tweeted out last night, he goes, when the dust all settles on this, you're going to thank me.
Yeah, I saw that as well. Yeah, you'll be thanking me.
You'll be thanking me.
And
now, And you have to think something, Chuck. You know, France just over the weekend had an election where they basically elected a progressive leftist, Emmanuel Macron, who basically, you might be seeing the end of the French culture as it's being subsumed by the Muslim Islamic culture. France had an opportunity, and they chose full well to go running headlong into more big government, which is not a surprise for France. America had a choice to make and took a different direction. You know, we had a choice in 2016. We could have run headlong into total government with electing Hillary Clinton and having basically everything be subsumed under the government. Or we could have elected, for better or for worse, depending on your viewpoint, Donald Trump, who at the very least has some idea of the fact that you kind of got to run government like a business. And it's not a business that, you know, you basically bail out all the time. You really have to do some things. And in order to get some things moving and to get some efficiencies happening and to get progress going in a business, sometimes you have to shake things up a little bit. Sometimes you have to replace personnel. Sometimes you have to reassign people. Sometimes you have to add divisions or eliminate divisions in a company in order to get it to working more efficiently and effectively. I think what we're seeing is good management happening or starting to happen in the realm of politics in Washington, D.C. And these old guard leftist Republicans like John McCain just can't handle it.
Well, we're back to what we talked about very early on when right after the election or actually during the election, this is nationalism versus globalism. Where did McCain make his remarks to? Remember the remarks you mentioned earlier. Where did he make them to?
The Munich Security Conference Core Group.
The Munich Security Conference Core Group is a globalist, essentially one world government group.
Right. And remember, this is the same group that a couple of months ago McCain invited and flew, I'm assuming on the taxpayer's dime, whether it's the federal taxpayers or the state taxpayers, our illustrious governor to sit in at the Munich Security Conference.
Yes, exactly. To make his bones as a good globalist. That was exactly what that was for. That was a telegraph to future supporters for a future run for Senate or president. That he was a good globalist. He's not one of these bad old nationalists who actually think that shudder that the interests of the nation are more important to us here than the interests of those who would want to govern on a global basis. Now, I'm not saying that we don't have the responsibility of interacting in a good way with the international community, but I also don't think that the way to get there is by turning everything over and creating a world government kind of operation. It has turned out to be a boondoggle in its infant form in the UN. Ask yourself, how well does the UN work? And the answer is it doesn't work very well at all. And the reason it doesn't work is because the interests of people throughout the world are too disparate. God designed government to work on a local basis for the most part. This is why he broke things up into tribes based on family groups. He broke it up because God, being the designer of human government, understands that most questions are handled best by local authority. In other words, what's the first thing that happened in Exodus when Moses' father-in-law came to him and said, "You're killing yourself." Now I'm paraphrasing. I'm doing the Message version of Exodus. But Trump's father, or Trump, Moses' father-in-law came to him and said, "You are killing yourself. You cannot handle this. You cannot take on every case." And he says, "Here's what you have to do. You have to break it up into bits. And you appoint judges who will deal with things at the local level. And only the most difficult cases will come to you." Okay? Now, how did Moses deal? How did he appoint these judges? Well, if you go to, I think it's Deuteronomy 1. Okay, I'm rusty on this. What he did was he makes it clear that those people were elected. Those people were chosen from among the elders in the specific families, clans, and tribes to do those jobs. Okay. Mm-hmm. What do we think about? The first thing we think about is we've got to centralize. Bigger is better. Is bigger better? No, bigger is not better. The reason the United States holds together as a nation is because essentially most jurisdiction is local. States most states hold together because people understand that it's easier to deal at the state level than it is at the federal level. Most counties understand that there are things that they're supposed to do, and therefore people are loyal, you know, to their county government. Township government, city government, that kind of thing. What happens when you start getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and attempt to eliminate those local jurisdictions? Essentially, government has to become more and more and more and more tyrannical. Essentially, decisions come down from on high. Do they make sense at the local level? Very often they don't. They make sense from an overall level, and it serves to feed back to the centralized government. This is why globalism, it's good to be globally connected. We can't be disconnected. We have to be in contact with everybody. It's a global market. We do sell things overseas. We have diplomacy overseas. This is why I'm a little more on the libertarian philosophy, that is trade and diplomacy for everybody. And war as little as possible. Now, some libertarians are just completely like, war is a tool of, war becomes necessary from time to time. Not sure how I got to that place. But what I'm saying is that we need to think about why these guys are all going over and talking to security groups in Europe. One of the reasons we have the United States of America here independent is because we threw off the yoke of European powers, and we did that because of their centralized corruption. Now we have people saying, well, we need to hook back up with Europe and we need to do things like Europe does. No, I don't think so. I think we need to do things like we've always done them, and that the way we always did them was at least guided and influenced by the Bible. So am I talking about biblical style government? Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Of course.
Now,
and barring that, at least let's be guided by the Constitution, which basically says that the executive has the right to hire and fire whom he needs to within the executive branch of government, which means Chuck Schumer, John McCain, et al., you really don't have any role to play in this. If Trump wants to fire James Comey, then Trump has the authority to fire James Comey constitutionally.
Yep.
And that should be the last word on it, Chuck.
It should be.
I mean, McCain made a passing glance at constitutionality. Well, yeah, he's got the constitutional right to, but... And that's always the thing with progressives. There's always that but.
Yeah.
It's the, yes, this is our form of government, but that's not what we want.
Yeah.
We want ultimate... Talk about authoritarianism.
Yes.
Robbie Mook is right. There's an authoritarian strain in our government right now, except it's coming from the likes of John McCain and Chuck Schumer and Ron Wyden, and Robbie Mook, who basically say, we've got to stop him from doing his constitutional job.
Well, we are out of time, Barry. I hate to stop it there because there's a lot more to be discussed, but we have to. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.